The University of Delaware MBA supports WHYY. The UD part-time MBA program offers busy professionals the opportunity to pursue their education and their careers. With flexible online and on-campus options and a variety of specializations, the program can be structured to meet both busy schedules and help with career advancement. November drop-in information sessions will be held Wednesday the 4th and Wednesday the 18th from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Learn more at udmba.com. The University of Delaware MBA. It is all about you.
Another day, another contraction of local media. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Philadelphia's two largest newspapers are merging with their online home. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports that journalists at the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com are bracing for layoffs.
Readers won't notice a big difference right away. Parent company Philadelphia Media Network will continue to print editions of the two newspapers while focusing more resources online. In meetings with staffers, publisher Terry Egger claimed the merger would save as much as $6 million. The company would not say how many jobs could be cut. Howard Gensler is president of the Newspaper Guild Union. He says the mood in the newsroom is grim.
A little bit of anger and frustration. Nobody cried yet because, again, nobody knows who's targeted.
Union leaders expect to meet with the company next week to begin discussing layoffs at the Inquirer, the Daily News, and Philly.com. Another question is whether the broadsheet and its tabloid sister will maintain their distinct voices and a healthy sense of competition. Gensler has his doubts.
There are certain issues that some people might be willing to talk to one paper more than the other. And if all the news is coming down through one silo, so to speak, and that's going to be lost. And that's unfortunate.
Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Philadelphia voters are heading to the polls Tuesday to pick a new mayor and elect city council. But the ballot will also feature candidates hoping to fill one of three so-called row offices, including sheriff. WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports on the race between a former Democratic state representative and a Republican anti-blight activist.
In the 1960s, Andy Griffith became a TV legend playing a small-town sheriff on The Andy Griffith Show. As the top lawman, Griffith's cool-headed character thwarts moonshiners, bank robbers, and anyone else disturbing the peace in the show's fictional North Carolina community.
You better give yourself up. This place will be surrounded by police in a matter of minutes. My deputy's getting the posse right now.
The life of a Philadelphia sheriff is a far cry from maintaining law and order in Mayberry.
This is the beginning of the process of when you file for your writ in order to get money that people owed you, in order to get a property or anything like that. So
in a cramped office above Broad Street, Sheriff Jewel Williams breaks down the duties of his employees. A lot of them transport prisoners and staff courtrooms during criminal proceedings. The rest have some tie to tax or mortgage delinquent properties that have been listed or sold through a sheriff's sale after the owner failed to pay up. Five times a month, properties are auctioned off to the highest bidder. Since taking over in 2012, Williams' office has put up roughly 10,000 properties for sale each year.
We went from $15 million to the city of Philadelphia to $25 million, from $25 million to $45 million.
This year, he projects sheriff sales will net the city more than $60 million. For Williams, that total is a sign that he's turning around an office that's just now joining the 21st century and been a financial basket case in the past. The city's last sheriff stepped down after an audit found that millions collected from sheriff sales couldn't be accounted for.
We've now made it better, and we're making it better every day. So we went from a quiet storm to a calm. Every time we send more money to the city of Philadelphia, we're resolving the issues that was happening in the past because we're actually helping the city work.
Republican Chris Sawyer, Williams' opponent, characterizes the office a bit differently, especially when it comes to the sheriff's sale process.
It's hard to describe whether or not it's incompetence or it's just, you know, I would just say just sheer willful disregard for what you're supposed to be doing as a sheriff when it comes to processing property.
While canvassing a packed flea market in northeast Philly, Sawyer says the city suffers because the sheriff's office is poorly managed.
The sheriff's office really is the key to unlocking the city. If you fix the real estate unit that's in there and make it more efficient, you participate directly in getting vacant and blighted abandoned properties moved up into the market, then you can turn around a huge amount of the city. You'll have developers coming in. You'll also have nonprofits expanding. You'll have a lot of economic activity driven off of that. And then that'll just turn around and move forward like inertia and start recapturing parts of the city that have been completely lost.
Sawyer's chances on Tuesday are pretty slim. Democrats outnumber Republicans 7-1. With so much settled during the May primary, voters also don't typically turn out for general elections unless there's a presidential race at the top of the ticket. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
I wear a hat just like a Mountie. I'm a sheriff of Boone County.
Let me tell you, boy, you in a heap of trouble, boy.
During Philadelphia's industrial heyday, the Manayunk Bridge delivered coal to the ironworks that lined the Schuylkill River. Over time, the factories closed, and eventually, the bridge did too. For the last 30 years, it's sat unused. But the Manayunk Bridge reopened today as a recreational trail. The conversion from rails to trails has become common across Pennsylvania as the state's Rust Belt cities look for creative ways to reuse abandoned infrastructure. For Keystone Crossroads, Jim Saxa has the story.
Construction crews are putting the final touches on the Manayunk Bridge as Chris Leswing, a township planner for Lower Marion, leads us on a tour.
Imagine the bridge. That was the initial pitch. You're stuck in traffic, you look up, and there's people riding over on their bikes.
On this day, traffic flows smoothly. Congestion problems in Lower Marion are one of the reasons why Leswing is so excited for the bridge to reopen as a path to bustling Manayunk for bicycles and pedestrians. Leswing points to a building in Manayunk.
We could be down at that Starbucks down on Main Street that we're looking at right now as we're standing over the bridge in about 7 minutes.
In some regards, this project is special. The bridge's conversion involved nearly a dozen local, state, and federal agencies. That level of intergovernmental cooperation is both difficult and rare, but the result is well worth it. The views are stunning and the bridge itself iconic.
It's one of those things that's always been the symbol of Manayunk. Every logo we've had has had the bridge on it.
Kay Sikora would know. She's worked for the Manayunk Development Corporation for decades, and she says those graceful concrete arches link Lower Marion and Manayunk in more ways than one.
It serves not only as a beautiful connection, but a symbolic connection, and a nice way to use some old infrastructure that was just sitting at this point.
The Manayunk Bridge connects two longer trails, the Kiwan Heritage Trail in Lower Marion and the Schuylkill River Trail that runs from Center City, Philadelphia to Valley Forge and beyond. The trails all feed into what local advocates call the circuit. So far, about half of the proposed 750-mile network around Philadelphia has been built. But it's difficult to link separate trails to create a cohesive system.
That's actually what's still missing in a lot of our trails is the connections, because you can build a section, but until you get all the connections in place, they aren't as functional as we would like.
In the past, trail advocates faced difficult opposition from neighbors who fear they would bring petty crime or hurt property values. But studies have shown that trails are safer than abandoned rights of way, and the values of adjacent properties usually rise, and sometimes even soar. Sikora counts over 1,300 new apartment units being built in the area, all of which prominently advertise their proximity to trails. Philadelphia is hardly the only Pennsylvania city converting rusting industrial-era infrastructure into green amenities. In fact, the Commonwealth leads the nation in rail-to-trail conversions. The Manayunk Bridge is number 171. To date, over 1,700 miles of rail have been converted, and another 600 miles have been identified for potential trails. According to Michael D. Baradinas, who helped oversee rail trail projects as head of the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, there's potential for a whole lot more.
We had this very elaborate railroad system that, over time, fell out of use due to the changes in the economy.
Dee Baradinas, who now serves as deputy mayor for Philadelphia Parks and Rec, says these conversions are not merely a matter of recycling rusty infrastructure. They're vital for transitioning from a gritty, manufacturing-based economy to a post-industrial one.
The old paradigm from the Industrial Revolution was the way you can extract economic value from the rivers was to block them up and, by the nature of the business, dirty them up, pollute them, and in some ways misuse them.
Lower Merion's Chris Leswing says that rail-to-trail conversions present a new way of using natural resources to spark economic growth, based on preserving them and providing access to them rather than exploiting them.
The trail creates trail-oriented development. All the new development that's going to happen in the township will all be connected to this trail network.
As cities like Philadelphia consider how to grow their economies, projects like the Maniac Bridge offer a green vision for development. For Keystone Crossroads, I'm Jim Saxa.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY is the lead station. Turning to this evening's headlines, the remaining section of an Army blimp that broke loose in Maryland and came to rest in the Pennsylvania countryside will be removed over the weekend. U.S. Army Captain Matthew Villa says the sensitive radar in the blimp's hull will be removed by the end of the day today. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has named Richard Hammer as New Jersey's newest transportation commissioner. Christie says he'll formally nominate Hammer to succeed Jamie Foxx. Foxx announced his departure earlier this month. The longtime Democrat left as the state's fund to pay for road and bridge work faces insolvency. Judges, mothers who are breastfeeding, and residents over the age of 74 do not have to serve on Pennsylvania juries under new state law. Governor Tom Wolf today signed the measure allowing the moms and older residents request to opt out of jury duty. Federal and state judges, including district judges, are automatically excluded. A New Jersey private liberal arts college says it's cutting 20 jobs and eliminating more than a dozen academic majors to help close a budget gap. Rider University President Gregory DeLomo tells NJ.com that it's a tough decision, but the right one for the university. Clear skies, 55 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:18. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Tonight's low, 38 degrees. Sunny tomorrow morning. Partly sunny in the afternoon, no rain for the trick-or-treaters. Saturday's high, 58 degrees. Then clouding up Sunday with a 30% chance of showers. Sunday's high, 62. Still ahead, we may be prepping for Halloween, but in Latin America and at the Penn Museum, tomorrow marks the Day of the Dead, a decidedly upbeat take on the afterlife.
A lot of people add music and have the mariachi bands that dance, and then we make it like a party.
Newsworks Tonight prepares to party after this.
This fall, only at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Audubon to Warhol, The Art of American Still Life, revealing the simple beauty and meaning of everyday things. It makes the familiar fresh and enables us to see things in new and different ways, with masterpieces by such celebrated artists as Charles Wilson Peale, John James Audubon, Georgia O'Keeffe, and Andy Warhol. This is one of the largest exhibitions of American still life in over 30 years. Tickets at philamuseum.org. The Philadelphia Museum of Art supports WHYY.
Penn Medicine and Virtua proudly support WHYY. Together, they are committed to delivering advanced healthcare options to South Jersey. By combining Penn Medicine's research and specialty care with Virtua's comprehensive health and wellness services, this partnership brings Penn and Virtua together to deliver cancer and neuroscience services to South Jersey residents, close to home. More information is available at virtua.org/pennmedicine. That's virtua.org/pennmedicine.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Is yours a preference for pigskin or candy? For many, the biggest Halloween treat will be watching one of the biggest college football games in years to be played in Philadelphia. When number 9 Notre Dame comes a-calling to the sold-out link to take on 21st-ranked Temple University tomorrow night. Let's scare up some facts and figures with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, the Fall Classic and the NFL, NHL, and NBA seasons underway. Where does college football fit into the mix?
Well, that's a good question. We know in general that football is the premier sport in America. We have asked for many years, what's your favorite sport to watch? Baseball used to win, but it was decades ago, Dave, that football took over from baseball. So everything else being equal, football definitely beats baseball in terms of being the favorite. Now you ask about college football in reference to the exciting game between the Owls and the Fighting Irish Saturday night. Pro football beats college football. Our latest update showed that 63%, which is a huge number, of Americans said they were fans of professional football, and it was 49% who were fans of college football. So college football doesn't have quite the same strength of fan support as pro football, but about half of Americans say, yes, I am a fan of college football.
Let's next turn to what others might call sport or spectacle, this week's third Republican presidential debate. Frank Herman Cain and Rudy Giuliani are cautionary tales of front runners who ran out of steam. What can we really make at this juncture?
Yeah, General Wesley Clark, Jesse Jackson, Edward Ted Kennedy, all of the above were leaders for their party's nomination at about this point. So you do have to be careful. Forgetting for the moment the candidates, Dave, the topics that were being discussed there actually were the topics that the public and Republicans are interested in. Of course, it was a CNBC-hosted debate, which meant it had an economic focus, but that's apropos. The economy, in one way or the other, when you lump it all together, continues to be by far the most frequently mentioned problem facing this country when we ask the public. And the second most frequently mentioned general idea is dysfunctional government, and that was discussed a lot last night as well. So at least being on top, I would say the debate was right in line with what Americans think the candidates should be discussing.
Though there were perhaps two unifying factors among the array of candidates, the disdain for Hillary Clinton and the disdain for the media and those specifically asking questions about the topics you just listed.
Yes, that's a useful punching bag. Republicans are very negative about the media in general, much more negative than Democrats. Republicans are more likely to say the media are biased. So in general, when a Republican candidate comes out and talks about the mainstream media or criticizes the media, they're resonating with the Republican base.
I wonder if Paul Ryan is destined to be a punching bag the way the departing House Speaker John Boehner came to be.
He comes in a very good position. Boehner ended underwater among Republicans, which is something that's very interesting. In other words, Boehner's favorable rating among Republicans was actually lower than his unfavorable rating, 36-42. Those were the numbers, favorable, unfavorable, for Boehner the last time we updated it just a bit ago. Paul Ryan, the last time we asked about him, was 57% favorable among Republicans and only 6% unfavorable. So Ryan comes into the office with very positive vibes, so to speak, among Republicans, replacing a man who was not liked universally by Republicans at all.
And Frank, you've cautioned before that a politician's best day is that day before he or she starts to serve office.
Yeah, very good point. Well, another example, Joe Biden looked very well in our polling when he was contemplating becoming a nominee or a candidate for the nomination for the Democratic Party. But had Biden decided to run, I think his favorables would have come down as well. So you're absolutely right. It's the person right before they jump into the fray that looks well. But once any of us get into the fray, so to speak, almost inevitably your positive vibes are going to come down some.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. Celebrating the memory of the dead has been a pre-Columbian tradition since the Aztecs ruled Mexico. With colonialism, Catholic celebrations were superimposed onto native rituals, and the Day of the Dead as we know it was born. It's a colorful and exuberant celebration of music, storytelling, and folk art. WHYY's Elizabeth Perez Luna went to the Penn Museum to follow the preparations for tomorrow's Día de los Muertos big event.
Even the departed need a bit of a respite in their journey towards their eternal resting place. So they might as well stop and enjoy spending time with family, eating their favorite foods, accompanied by the music they liked as mortals. It's tradition in Mexico to build an elaborate altar, an ofrenda, to celebrate the dead. It's a family and community affair, says Ana Flores, executive director of the Mexican Cultural Center in Philadelphia, which is co-sponsoring the event. In Mexico, the celebrations are usually at the graveyard. It may sound a bit creepy, but it's an occasion for remembrance and celebration.
A lot of people add music and have the mariachi bands that dance, and then we make it like a party.
At the Penn Museum, the 9-by-12-foot altar Flores, muralist Cesar Viveros, and a dozen or more volunteers created occupies one entire side of the enormous Asian art room. This ofrenda is dedicated, says Viveros, to the late painter Rufino Tamayo, the father, in many ways, of an art form that combines the many cultures of Mexico. Tamayo's imagery and bold colors have always inspired Viveros.
He comes from Oaxaca. This is a small town where he witnessed all these huge, beautiful ofrendas that they do everywhere, and even on cemeteries. It's like for a few nights, you go there, and it looks like a daylight. There's so many candles everywhere, so much people, and so much things going on.
His portrait of Tamayo, painted in subdued colors, dominates the altar, and he's surrounded by an explosion of colorful paper flowers, masks, sculptures, ghoulish skeleton figurines, sugar skulls, and other objects that make up the vibrant feeling of the place.
We have papel picado, that is a tissue paper that we cut it. That represents the wind, and it helps them, the wind helps them to go to the afterlife. We also have sugar skulls, and well, that the skulls try to be colorful so that they are not scary for the children. We have water in case they are thirsty.
And they made 700 orange marigold paper flowers. Every artifact, photograph, and heirloom is also a vehicle for oral histories. New generations learn about their grandparents and great-grandparents through the stories that are passed along. The Penn Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology has been hosting these Mexican celebrations for 4 years. At the event, visitors are summoned to surround the altar, share the food and the stories, and enjoy the music and the giant dancing puppets. Elizabeth Perez Luna, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from our intern, Kevin Rowley. Our news director is Eugene Song. At the helm this week, Al Banks, Diana Martinez, and Adam Staniszewski. John Mussoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Theater Exile supports WHYY and presents the world premiere of Rizzo by Bruce Graham, directed by Joe Canuso, based on the best-selling book by Sal Palantonio. From beat cop to police commissioner to mayor of Philadelphia, this anticipated production explores the larger-than-life man and his unfiltered opinion and brings to light what made Frank Rizzo both revered and reviled by so many. Running from October 15th through November 8th. Tickets and information at 215-218-4022 or at theaterexile.org.
Bard Academy at Simon's Rock supports WHYY and will host an open house on Friday, November 6th. Located in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, Bard Academy's two-year boarding and day school prepares students to enter college early. More information about academic and residential programs, the faculty, and the campus located in the Berkshires is available online at simons-rock.edu. Bard Academy at Simon's Rock supports WHYY.